And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. David, does the name Richard Grenell mean anything to you?
Well, it didn't until this week.
Well, you don't follow the comings and goings of our ambassadors. I can see that.
No, not generally. I mean, most of them are fairly anonymous. There are a couple who are famous or infamous in our history.
Right.
But, you could talk about Thomas Jefferson being the ambassador to France and John Adams being the ambassador to England and Ben Franklin being an ambassador. Those men in history, but most ambassadors.
Or Joe Kennedy.
Joe Kennedy. Yeah, that was a big one before World War II.
Right.
And Pamela Harriman.
Yes, Pamela Harriman. That's right.
Yeah.
Oh, and of course, Ambassador Dodd, very famous ambassador to Germany in the 30s.
Okay.
So he made his mark.
Yes.
Well, he had an unenviable job. Well, he had to stand up to Hitler.
Yeah.
But Grenell, Richard Grenell, our current ambassador to Germany, one of the most interesting ambassadors, because nobody who works in the government of Germany will talk to him because he's abrasive, rude, and operates outside of his mandate, apparently.
Fits the Trump mold. A lot of ego, a lot of PR stuff, and apparently doesn't know an awful lot.
Well, it would be hard to imagine that he did know an awful lot. One of his best friends is Donald Trump Jr., and his big ally in government is Ivanka Trump.
That's, it's not what you know, it's who you know.
Right. This man has now been appointed to be in charge of all 17 intelligence agencies of the United States government, although he has not yet spent one day in intelligence work.
And the law requires someone to have an intelligence background for that.
There you go again. There you go again. The law. The law.
I'm a lawyer. What do you expect me to cite?
Well, it's not so much that you're a lawyer, it's that you were brainwashed by leftist teachers who taught you that we are a nation of laws, not of men.
Oh, those silly people, right?
Dangerous people. Dangerous people.
Dangerous people.
Transmitting secular humanism.
How about transmitting the Founding Fathers' intent or the Constitution?
Same thing. Same thing. And that's what's so dangerous about the Constitution. Which is why it needs to be reinterpreted by the originalists.
Hmm. Yeah.
Anyway, that's a different story.
That's another show.
That's right. Anyway, Grenell got appointed this last week to be the head of the entire intelligence community, and he started with a bang. And why did he get appointed? Because the intelligence community had the temerity to follow the law and brief the House Intelligence Committee about what they discovered about the Russians' latest shenanigans trying to disrupt the 2020 elections in the United States. But the real point of the briefing was to coordinate how the American government should respond to it. Trump was told about this. He didn't care about the response. That's not his interest. What he cared about was Adam Schiff was involved because he's the chairman of the committee. He heard the information, and he said, Schiff will use this against me. Get rid of the director. How's that?
And, yeah. Well, he was also mad that he heard it from, I believe, Devin Nunes did another midnight ride to the White House to tell him. Trump apparently did not get this from his own people executive branch. He got it from the congressional branch after it was done, after it was
a fait accompli. Why would he? It's nothing for – I mean, it was a standard, you know, interagency meeting. In fact, they had the same briefing with the Senate a month ago. And so what? The so what was Adam Schiff didn't take part in that meeting. He only took part in the House meeting. So right. What Trump cares about is the politics of the thing insofar as it relates to him and not insofar as it relates to the election itself.
Well, it's more than politics. It's his ego that's being bruised because, as you know, in 2016, and the evidence showed and the Mueller report showed that the Russians played a heavy part in helping to at least attempt to elect Donald Trump. And that he sees as a delegitimization of his victory. Now, outside of the fact that he lost by 3 million votes, which would also be a delegitimization of his victory, you know, he's still going around and he was up in New Hampshire still claiming that they had those busloads of people from Massachusetts who voted against him, and that's why he lost the state by a hair. This is a man who, you know, has very fragile ego. And, everything has to be all about him and only the most positive and extremely positive terms. And, you know, this is an ongoing thing, the psychological makeup of Donald Trump. It's more than just
I think you're right. I think you're right. But I think this is an interesting example of how the individual and the individual's motives interact with the general and with the because what happens here is what he's doing is saying that the Congress has no legitimate right to be briefed, even though the law and the Constitution says the Congress does have a legitimate right and need to be briefed by the intelligence community. But in order for him to assuage his ego, he has to go outside his ego and actually undercut the law and the Constitution. And that's the real danger. If it was just his ego, if it was just him and his mirror, who would care? The fact is it doesn't work for him unless he can actually make sure that the government is changed and tortured in a way that deprives us of our rights. And in this case, the right of the people to be represented in the legislature.
But there's a second thing here that we have to consider. The Congress is supposed to step up and do its role. And we have half the Congress, the Republican half of the Congress, that's refusing to do so. There are bills in front of Congress, for instance. There are at least two or three bills that the House has passed to help ensure or protect the integrity of the election coming up that Mitch McConnell will not bring up for a vote. These bills would pass in the Senate without much of a problem. He won't even bring them up because he's afraid or unwilling to face the wrath of Donald Trump and do something there. And the other senators in his coalition and the members of the House, certainly the Republican members of the House, are more than willing to forego their duties in terms of oversight and in terms of being a co-equal branch of government. And that's the thing that I think that the founding fathers never anticipated when they put in these checks and balances. They believed that the congressional branch, or if the shoe was on the other foot, the executive branch, would exercise their independent authority. And the Republicans in Congress have chosen not to do that. And again, that flies also in the face of the Constitution.
Well, the Republicans in Congress, and you've made this point many times, they don't believe that the Democrats have a legitimate right to be in the Congress. They believe only they have a legitimate right not only to be in the Congress, but to be in the executive mansion.
Right.
So it doesn't matter if the Democrats get cut out of this or get cut out of that. They don't have the right to be there or shouldn't have the right to be there in any case. But that kind of makes a mockery of the electoral system. Why bother with elections in that case?
Well, you know, we seem to be moving down toward that path. There are some people that believe that should the polling go south on Donald Trump, and there's a lot of time left, we don't know what's going to happen or what might change people's minds, that he would do whatever he needed to do to disrupt the election himself, declare a national emergency or whatever. Or if he was to lose the election, that he would do everything to say, I'm not leaving. I know Bill Maher talks about that all the time. He keeps asking, Maher keeps asking his guests, the Democrat, what are you going to do if he does this? And he keeps saying, you're just not prepared for this. The Democrats have no real intensity in meeting this kind of fervor and this single-mindedness of destroying the Constitution. And
so how would it work? Trump would wake up the day after Election Day and he would say, we've discovered a vast conspiracy of fraudulent voting, and we have to cancel the result of the last vote. And pending a new election sometime in the future, I just, unfortunately, I don't mean to do this. I don't want to do this. I have to extend my presidency. It'll take at least a year or so to straighten this all out. Is that how it would work?
That's one of the scenarios, you know, declare martial law or something. Remember, a lot of what he has done and gotten away with and the courts have acquiesced in some respect, has been under the guise of national security.
Everything. The trade deals are all national security. The Muslim ban, national security. The immigration stuff, national security. The wall, right. National security. By the way, this week, he directed the Pentagon to cancel the right of the 750,000 civilian workers who work in Pentagon-related industries, to cancel their right to collective bargaining in the name of national security. That happened this week.
You know,
naturally, national security. Okay, so he does that. So now what?
The deep state. Well, that's what you have. You know, we'll. I hope we never have to see that, but if we do,
But you make a good point. You say that Maher makes the point that this guy, you know, you can expect this from him. He's been doing it straight along. Supposing he does it, let's say chances are 1 in 2 in 10, 3 in 10. What if those 3 in 10 occur? What's your response? What would they do? What would we do?
Well, I think you'd have, you know, we saw. On January 21st, 2017, the day after he was inaugurated, with that less than magnificent crowd, we saw huge crowds gathering all over the country, including on the Mall. I think you would start to see that. I would hope you would start to see that. But if I was the Democratic winner of the election, I would be on television the very next day and saying, look, folks, I've been elected. On January 20th, 2017, 21, I'm going to take the oath of office. And the first thing is I'm going to direct the military to take Donald Trump out of the White House.
You should be arrested.
Yeah, we're going to do this. And I'm telling the military right now that I'm going to be the commander in chief. And it'll be interesting. I want
to. Do you think whoever the president would be would have to go to Caracas to get on television?
I don't know. I don't know on that, but if it's looking anything like that, I'd like to see what the Mad Dog Mattis does and General Kelly does and General McMaster does. I think we know what General Flynn will do. He'll stand up for Donald Trump, but I'd like to see some of the others who have been there. And, you know, who knows? Donald Trump this week threatened to take away the licenses of CNN and MSNBC. Of course, they don't have licenses. But you could see him trying to, you talk about Caracas or state-run television, you could see him trying to interfere with that stuff. I mean, Donald Trump isn't even happy with Fox News now.
No, he likes only Sinclair News.
Yeah. So he's, he's planning to, I'm sure, set up his own TV network at some point. I think he was going to do that if he lost the election in 2016. But I think he's making those plans. But, you know, I think we're getting a little far afield here on that. But the big thing is with this intelligence briefing and whatever. And by the way, the briefing also said that Donald Trump wasn't the only one that the Russians were favoring. that they were trying to help Bernie Sanders
right.
in 2016, and they're still trying to help Bernie Sanders.
But Trump denies that it happened. Sanders, at least, once it became public, did the right thing, and he said, keep your fingers out of this, to Putin. And he made a strong right. statement about that. Who knows whether this Russian meddling has any effect? We don't know.
And
Trump's defense of it is, well, we do the same thing to other countries, which is completely true, but completely beside the point.
Right. Right. It's against the law for foreigners to do this. Mueller indicted a whole number of Russians.
30 different Russians. Right.
And he named them. And yeah. And the reason that and the way they did it was by a use of the social media, where they targeted people very cleverly to try to foment dissent among the Democrats.
Right.
Fed information to African Americans, fed information to women, to various groups to try to undercut support for Hillary Clinton or to gin up support for Jill Stein or do whatever they wish to do. The purpose of it is twofold, not only to change a vote, but to suppress a vote.
Yeah, I think the main thing is to suppress the vote.
Yeah, that's always been the purpose of negative campaign advertising, is to suppress the vote, to make people say, oh, I just don't want to, vote. You know, I don't like Donald Trump, but I can't bring myself to vote for Hillary Clinton, so I'm going to sit this one out.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing. And that's what's going on. That's what's going on.
Well, if all these shenanigans by the Trump people call into question whether it pays to vote because they're going to nullify the vote, should we still have an election coming up?
Yeah, interestingly, we had that debate this week, and we had this thing come out earlier in the week about the Intelligence Committee, and not one single question was asked of the Democratic candidates about this fact.
You got to say that the NBC questioners were terrible.
Yeah.
And they've been terrible in the past. Todd especially. I don't know how he keeps his job. Well, I mean, I suppose he keeps his job because his bosses are no better than he. But he's dumb.
Yeah, I mean, this was the most watched Democratic debate in history, from what I understand.
20 million. Almost the second most watched debate, period.
Yeah, and this was an opportunity to alert the American people who really don't follow things that these things are going on.
Right. Right.
And it should have been out there. And if it wasn't raised as one of the questions, I think one of the candidates should have raised it. But, of course, you're in the heat of a debate. And they were too busy, attacking each other, in essence. Buttigieg going against Amy trying to defend herself. And, of course, everybody beating up on Mike Bloomberg.
Apparently with good cause.
Yeah. Yeah. Elizabeth Warren was surgical in the way she took him apart. She acted like a good trial lawyer. She found a weak spot. She kept hammering it and hammering it and hammering it.
Well, it's interesting that not that Bloomberg should put himself forward in this way, but that so many Democratic establishment types should think that he is an acceptable alternative to Biden. Because that's what he's posing himself as, is the alternative right. to Biden in order to put down Bernie. What you want about Biden, his pluses and his minuses. Bloomberg came out of that debate looking evil. Elizabeth Warren was right. Stop and frisk wasn't bad because it went too far. Stop and frisk was bad because of what it was intended to do to begin with. And he defended it to begin with. Biden, by the way, lied about stop and frisk. He said that the stop and frisk ended only when the Obama administration sent in some monitors to put it down. That's not what happened at all. Stop and frisk ended because there was a court ruling based on a court case that the Center for Constitutional Rights spent 5 years fighting. By the way, a left-wing organization spent 5 years fighting. They won the case. Bloomberg appealed it, and only when de Blasio became mayor was the appeal abandoned. So he fought for the stop and frisk to the end.
Yeah, now, interestingly, the judge who ruled in, against the stop and frisk, Shira Scheindlein, or
yes,
whatever
Shira
her name was.
Scheindlein, right.
Yeah, came out this week and was interviewed, and she said she didn't think that Mike Bloomberg was a racist. She kind of, she didn't go against her own ruling. She defended that, but she kind of supported Mike Bloomberg, at least in tone, rather than in substance, which was I thought was interesting.
I don't know why she bothered to do that. I mean,
currying favor, I guess.
Who knows?
I don't know.
She's retired. She doesn't need his favor, although you know, he spreads a lot of money around.
I understand. I didn't understand it myself.
Yeah. But I mean, if you do racist things, what's the difference what you think in your heart? Right. You're a racist.
Yeah. Now, what's going to be interesting is the how this is going to affect the caucus vote. It's another caucus state where they're using another app in Nevada.
That's and, right. Saturday is the
Now, I can't see it, you know, but reducing the vote for Mike Bloomberg. I mean, it had to do that. The question is, where is that vote going to go? Is it going to go to Biden? Is it going to go to Buttigieg or Klobuchar? Is it going to go to Elizabeth Warren? I mean, her calculations seem to be that she could take votes from Bloomberg and attract votes to herself. We'll see.
Well, I think I think that the analysts have said that the Warren, that Elizabeth Warren is in competition with Klobuchar, Buttigieg, and Biden. They're splitting the vote. Those four. So if any one of those three of Biden, Buttigieg, and Klobuchar loses a vote, that vote goes to Warren. That's how it works. So I don't know how Bloomberg fits into this. He's in the same group. It's not clear to me that he has any votes, but that's in the same group. So Warren would benefit to the detriment of those four, Bloomberg, Klobuchar, Biden, and Buttigieg.
Well, we're going to find out. We're going to find out. The one thing is, though, that there were about 77,000 votes cast before the debate in early voting.
And those are probably Bernie votes. Most of them.
They probably should be Bernie votes. They could be Bloomberg votes. We don't know. But that's the interesting thing about early voting is if something happens, and if we get to the November election, a lot of states, Pennsylvania is going to have early voting up to 50 days before the election. A lot of states are 30 days or 14 days before the election. You know, a lot can happen in the last 2 weeks, as we found out last time with the Comey statement. That's the one drawback of early voting is you can't take your vote back. Now, Pennsylvania does have a mechanism that if you voted by absentee, you can go to your polling place and pull your vote and then cast a regular ballot. But how many people are actually going to go through and do that? Oh, I don't know if a lot of the other states you can't because it's like Oregon is mail-in only.
Yeah.
You know, and they count well after. So that's something to think about when we talk about expanding the vote through early voting and mail-ins and things like that.
But apparently what the Democratic race is boiling down to at this moment is stop Bernie.
Yeah. And we're going to see. Don't forget, he still is, you know, he's still only in a plurality position. And it's kind of analogous to what happened with Trump. Trump never had the majority of votes for a long time. He just had more votes than all the others who were splitting the remaining votes.
Right.
And we've seen in in New Hampshire and in Iowa that if you added up the Biden, Klobuchar, Buttigieg, it exceeded the Bernie vote.
Yeah, but what you're doing is directly contrary to the structure of every single American electoral system, which doesn't add them up, which divides them, whether it's the electoral college or it's districting in the states. That's the whole point. You don't have proportional representation in American voting. You have, district voting. No.
But this is the preliminary vote. I mean, when you get to the...
But it just follows through. It just carries through the pattern of all the other systems.
Yeah. But it's still, under the Democratic rules, you get to the convention. You still have the rule is you've got to get a majority. And if you're at 40% of the vote, I know Bernie's declaring victory at 40%. He said, I should be the nominee. Well, in history, that didn't know, you know, that's never worked. You've got to get to that 50+1 vote. And we've had some extended fights. The Republican nomination in 1920, 100 years ago, went, I don't know what, 102 ballots or something. We had the Lincoln, you know, he went to several ballots. He wasn't the first choice going in. He was second or third on that going in.
But you're talking about a time, even in 1920, when there was really not Democratic participation in the choosing of the candidate.
Right.
These
right.
were either done by, you know, party elites in the 1920s,
yep.
or by not party elites, but by most people were disenfranchised in the 1900s. We have had an expansion of participation in democracy since World War II.
Yeah.
So the pattern of the past is not a good guide for the future or the present even.
Right.
People are going to – if Bernie comes into the convention with 40% or 49% and somehow or other the superdelegates figure out a way, because then on the second ballot there's 500 new votes on top of the chosen
right.
delegates. And if those delegates, those 500 office holders and Democratic Party officials are the ones that give somebody else the nomination, I don't think the Democrats are going to be able to beat Trump.
Well, we'll see. I mean, if it comes in with 49%, it's one thing. If it comes in with 39 or 40%, there's a difference.
Why?
Because one, you're right. You're almost there. The other one, you got 60%. You don't have.
You forgot. Close but no cigar.
Yeah.
Close but no cigar. Remember?
Yeah.
That's the way it works.
But I think if he's at 49%, he'd get over the top. But 40, it's not a sure thing.
No.
But, you know,
well, who would give it to him? Bloomberg would give it to him? Hillary Clinton would give it to him? Are you kidding?
Well, no.
I mean, Bloomberg told him he's a communist. He said that on the stage. He said, we tried that, what you want before. It's called communism. It failed.
Yeah.
That's a return to the 1950s. That's Donald Trump all over again.
Yeah, but that didn't help Bloomberg at all.
No.
But, you know, you talk about the convention where, you know, I'm running for an alternate delegate to the convention, and the petitions had to be in this week for delegates and alternate delegates, and there were some interesting things about that.
You go further, this election goes by congressional district, right?
That's correct.
Okay.
And now we're in the 8th.
You're running in the 8th congressional district.
Right.
Okay.
And in that district, only four people put in petitions to run as regular delegates, not alternates, full delegates for Biden. Six put in for Bernie. And then there was one each for Klobuchar, Buttigieg, Steyer, and what have you. But in filing the petitions, what was most interesting was the number of signatures and the number of pages of petitions that were put in for the candidates themselves. And Bernie far exceeded everybody else's on the Democratic ticket. He had more than double of anybody else in terms of the number of pages of petitions. Biden was down in the middle of the pack, which was kind of something. And then even within the 8th district, Bernie exceeded Biden's votes. And this is Biden's home area. Of course, I think the more shocking number is that Donald Trump's petition for the state was, you know, more than triple of Bernie's, and it was more than all the Democrats put together.
Well,
so there's an intensity
there's 30 signatures to a page. So if all of them were filled out, Bernie in the 8th district filed 35,000 signatures, and Biden filed 13,000. Not too good.
No.
All right, that's it for today.
Well,
we don't know what will happen
next week.
There's no way to tell. But whatever it is, we'll be here to talk about it. See you next week. You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place. This program is supported by Argosy Bookshop of New York City, 116 East 59th Street, just down the block from Bloomingdale's. Old and rare books, prints and maps, members of the International League of Antiquarian Booksellers, founding members of the Antiquarian Booksellers Association of America, members of the Appraisers Association of America, on the web at Argosy Books, ArgosyBooks.com. Check them out for books, autographs, maps, and prints.